This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for our program. We have two distinguished guests who've been with us a time or two before. Mary Patricia Ray on the left side of the spectrum against Jeff Satto on the right. Dr. Satto is a professor of renown of political science at LSU Shreveport, and Mary Patricia Ray is a political strategist and also a professor of law, and she is here to talk about matters that are important near and far, as is Dr. Satto, including what's happening at the Capitol, what's happening at LSU, and what's going on in the halls of Congress. And today, there is a vote that is in the offing to depose Liz Cheney as the number three person in the U.S. House of Representatives on the Republican side, behind Kevin McCarthy of California and Steve Scalise of Louisiana. And this is being done because Liz Cheney has taken aim at former President Donald Trump, saying that President Trump sparked the insurrection on January 6th. And it appears that every member of the Louisiana delegation, all the Republicans, will vote to take away the leadership post for Congresswoman Cheney. 877-217-5757 is your number. Let's begin with Dr. Satto. Is this a prudent move, or is this potentially a problem for the GOP? How do you see it, Jeff?
No, it's something that over the last couple of months has become obvious. It's something that had to be done. When you know, this is the second challenge that she's had, and to maybe bring you a little up to speed, it's already happened about 15 minutes ago. There was a voice vote that basically got rid of her. There's been no replacement name, but the vote by voice has already been done to remove her. Overdue, because when in February this was done, you know, this is right after the questionable impeachment of then President Trump, and you know, then the issue was her and, you know, others voting for that, and that wasn't really seen as a reason to get rid of her. The problem is, over the next few months, she has kept at it and kept at it, and really, you know, the Republican conference, you know, wants to move on to other, you know, current relevant things, but Cheney just would not seem to do that. And of course, as a representative of the conference, as a voice of it, she needs to follow what the conference, what its wishes are. And she wasn't doing it. And so that's why now, 3 months later, there's a, you know, very, very different reaction from the party.
The reaction from the party is such that most members of the Republican delegation, Dr. Satto, have yet to acknowledge that Joe Biden really won the election. So how can this be put behind the party and the country when there is still conjecture and defiance about Joe Biden being the legitimate president of the United States?
Well, the you know, she might be talking about that. A few others might be talking about it, but you know, that's something that hardly anybody, you know, in the congressional party is talking about or discussing. You know, that issue is closed. I mean, Biden's the president. Lots of stuff has happened since then that needs to be addressed, and that's what the conference wanted her to do, and she wouldn't do it.
We do have a recount, another one going on in Arizona. The Republicans are backing this. If you watch Fox News, you know that they don't believe, largely, the commentators who are in prime time don't believe that Joe Biden is the legitimate president. So I don't know that the GOP has put the election of 2020 behind.
Well, the congressional party in the House of Representatives, who she represents, certainly has. So, you know, that, you know, if we're trying to see a connection between those two events, there really isn't one in that sense.
Do you think the president sparked the insurrection on January 6th?
No. You know, that was something that, as we now know, was pre-planned. That was something that there was intelligence about. And, you know, it, know, it certainly was not a case of a bunch of people at a rally suddenly all getting hepped up and storming the Capitol. That's just, what we know of the events, that wasn't it.
If it was known it was going to happen, why didn't the former president try to stop it?
Well, it was known by the leaders of Congress and the Capitol Police. And
you're saying the president didn't know?
I don't know. What we do know, what is the information that's been publicly released, is that, again, the leadership was briefed on this. They didn't think it credible or, whatever the reason might be. There were certain actions that could have been taken that weren't, that would have enhanced Capitol security. Whether that would have made a difference, we don't know. But, again, there's very little evidence to suggest that, there was this crowd and the president spoke. And, we even look at the rhetoric of the speech, and it indicates that Trump did not, he said, if you're going to do anything, do it peacefully, paraphrasing it. So, it's just really a leap to try to make that connection.
877-217-5757 is your number for Dr. Satow and for Mary Patricia Ray. And now it's Mary Patricia's turn to chime in. I suspect you see things much differently than does Dr. Satow, Mary Patricia.
Well, it's creative public relations to attempt, although I don't think very well, to spin this story as though Liz Cheney is the one who won't move on. The members of Congress that are insisting that President Biden is not the legitimate president just held a rally about that very subject in Florida earlier this week or late last week. It may have been on the weekend. The deposing her from her current position, Ms. Cheney, is it's a good distraction set of politics for a party that doesn't want any dissenters to have influence over actually moving on and governing the country. So, it's a strategy. I'm not sure that in terms of long-term sustainability for them gaining more seats or keeping the ones they have, that it's going to work out.
The Louisiana delegation will, I'm sure, go to the mat for Steve Scalise, who is the number two person and has advocated the removal of Liz Cheney. And that means Garrett Graves and Clay Higgins and Mike Johnson and Julia Letlow. They all will be saying, get rid of Liz Cheney. What does that say about our delegation? Are they puppets, or are they sincere in saying that she needs to go? What's your take on that, Mary Patricia?
With respect for our delegation, they're entitled to select the leadership of their own party in Congress, just like the other party is entitled to do. I would hope that some of them come up with better reasons for the type of leadership that they're choosing. And frankly, if they're going to replace Ms. Cheney, that they would replace her with someone who is as good of a leader as she is. I think that she was, frankly, doing a really good job of helping the Republican Party heal from a pretty devastating loss for them. They need some more of that. But, our delegation is entitled to choose who they want to lead their own party. And if they want to make a mistake, it's their prerogative.
This will not end today. There will be a full court press to try to remove Liz Cheney from Congress, and she is in a small state with just one congressperson, the smallest state. Wyoming has fewer than 700,000 residents, and quite possibly she will have a difficult chance or shot at winning re-election, Mary Patricia, so that would be the ultimate payback for President Trump.
Yeah, well, and I guess what does that say about President Trump and the state of the Republican Party right now? That is what we're all talking about today. That's what we're focused on. When I think we could name a few other pressing issues that are facing the crisis, including Ms. Cheney's constituents in Wyoming.
Well, Jeff Satow, where do you see this going? Does it end today? Does it tamp down, or are we going to continue to relitigate the 2020 election?
Well, it ends today in the sense that, you know, it doesn't end in one way in that there's not yet been a number three selected. We're not sure when that's going to happen. Probably, maybe later today, probably by the end of the week. But, you know, it ends after that. Maybe not in Wyoming. Liz Cheney certainly is going to have a very difficult path for reelection. But, you know, again, there's so many other things going on now in the country. The very perilous course that the Biden administration has set the country as a whole on.
877-217-5757. We're going to take a 90-second break and return with Mary Patricia Ray and Jeff Saddo. The likely successor is Representative Elise Stefanik of New York, who is not as conservative as Liz Cheney. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Pleasure to share the microphone with you, and your number is 877-217-5757. House Republicans have voted to remove Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming as GOP conference chair over her opposition to former President Trump. Cheney voted to impeach Trump and has repeatedly rebutted his claims of election fraud. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says he supports replacing Cheney with New York Representative Elise Stefanik, who has a more moderate voting record but is a Trump supporter. But McCarthy said basically the same thing that Liz Cheney said as far as President Trump causing the insurrection on January 6th, something one of our guests, Jeff Saddo, says the president did not do, and the other, Mary Patricia Ray, says the president contributed to the riot at the Capitol 4 months ago. 877-217-5757. Tim in Thibodeau. Tim, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you.
Thank you very much. Two congruent points of view, odd spaces, though. One, you may remember Brother Dave Gardner, who was a comedian down on the coast.
I do remember him, but what is your question? And please turn your radio down, Tim. What is your question for Dr. Saddo and for Mary Patricia Ray? Tim?
My question is Steve Scalise truly without truth? Or?
All right. Steve Scalise is a man on the move. At some point, he may be Speaker of the House. Is he taking the right position on this sensitive matter, Jeff, to further his political ambition?
I don't know if it's a further ambition. That might be a byproduct. I think he thinks it's the right call. You know, again, he and McCarthy and the leadership as a whole three months ago were not in favor of removing Cheney. But again, over the subsequent 3 months, her conduct and her inability to represent the conference as it wishes to be represented, that's the thing that's done her in.
How about Steve Scalise, Mary Patricia? He is a Louisiana guy, made good, an LSU graduate. He is possibly on the precipice of being Speaker of the House in the next few years. Does this hurt him? Does it help him? And is he making the right call?
Well, I think in the current setup of the folks in Congress that he is leading, Steve Scalise has very little choice but to enthusiastically endorse Ms. Cheney's removal if he wants to stay in leadership, that is. And so, I mean, it's not really surprising. I don't know that there's anything more ambitious about this particular decision than anything else Steve Scalise has done in the last 15 years.
All right. Well, we've got some folks waiting. We're going to try to get to as many of you as possible. And please be patient if you're calling 877-217-5757 for Mary Patricia Ray and Jeff Saddo. Victor on the I-10 bridge. Victor, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. I guess my comment on my question would be related to the fact that it was stated that the GOP had, you know, the Congress had moved on from the the comments or the ideas about the election and so on and so forth. But I have an issue with that because you had congressmen from other states filing grievances and charges about elections in that were going on in other states. So how can they say that the Congress had moved on and Liz Cheney was the one who was continuing to push this?
All right. It appears that the country, and we're talking about the Republicans, the almost 75 million people who voted for Donald Trump, many of them have not moved on, Mary Patricia. And how does that get corrected, or does it continue until the next election and in the midterms? What are we looking at as far as the division we have right now?
Well, it's no accident that folks have not moved on. I mean, that's part of the plan to recruit and retain the most conservative members of Congress that the Republican Party possibly can. And by removing Ms. Cheney today and doing other things like holding rallies that dispute the outcome of the elections, they make sure that journalists like you, Jim, and onlookers like me are required to continue to talk about it forever, playing to their base. I mean, this is not an accident. It's all part of the political theater.
All right. Holly in the Garden District.
Good morning.
Phil. We'll get to you. But Holly in the Garden District sends an email about Jeff Sato, who I think she is correct on previous programs, has indicated he thinks Donald Trump will not be the Republican nominee in 2024, but it sure appears like he is trying to be the nominee. Where is that going, Professor Sato?
Yeah, no, I haven't changed my opinion on that. I think Trump, if he hasn't realized it yet, is going to come to this realization that the nature of the times in 2024 are going to be different than they were in 2016 or 2020. And, you know, he's getting up there in age, and, you know, I know that he likes publicity, but I think he's settling more into trying to be a power broker within the party than actually trying to front the party in any White House bid. So, you know, I still think that's where he's headed. So I would not anticipate a Trump candidacy in 2024.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, please be brief. Phil, you're on.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know something? I doubt that we will see any person in the Trump family in an orange jumpsuit or...
All right, what's your question, Phil?
My question is, how can you not know this is... they're holding the millionaire Maginot mine. In the next 6 months, that's all they have to do.
To do what? Okay, I'm not sure I understood, Phil. Let's go to David in Shenandoah. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, David.
Good morning, Jim. I was just going to make a comment and had a question for Mr. Sato, but Mr. Sato seems to be tap dancing on a tightrope on situations and questions you're posing. But, however, I feel that does he feel that the GOP is a totalitarian situation that they're representing that's very leans toward a fascist?
All right. Is that a fair assessment of the grand old party, Professor Sato, that it's a totalitarian party that is leaning on a supreme leader and the former president?
No. If either of the major parties you were going to make that characterization about, I think it would be closer to the Democrats.
And why?
Well, look at the ideological orthodoxy that's now being imposed within the party. I mean, you look at the very few dissenters that are even left in Congress, such as Joe Manchin, and the absolute vitriol that they receive from the extremist left that's taken over most of the organs of the party. I think that's a much better indication to that attitude as opposed to this more openness that we see in the Republican Party. I mean, just the fact that we've been having this discussion about Liz Cheney within the party.
Well, it doesn't appear that the Republican Party is very open to any dissent of President Trump. And you are right, the Democratic Party has moved leftward. But isn't the country moving leftward as well?
No, if you look at the opinion polls.
Well, what about gay marriage? What about other issues that years ago would have been dead in the water, but now they're accepted as part of our life?
I'm not so sure I would say accepted as part of our life on those particular issues. That's correct, though, that on those issues that there has been more movement that way. But
we have a transgender Republican, Caitlyn Jenner, running for governor of California, which means that there is a element of progression in the Republican Party, if that is the right word.
If that's the right word. But anybody can say they're anything and run, and that's not to say that people that... Jenner.
All right, we're going to return. We'll get Mary Patricia's take after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Matt Doyle is producing. And on the right side of the political spectrum is Dr. Jeff Satto, LSU political scientist and blogger and columnist from the conservative side of the political spectrum, and Mary Patricia Ray, who by Louisiana standards is to the left of center in our state, a state Donald John Trump won by right at 400,000 votes in the year of 2020. Now, before we hit the break, Mary Patricia, Dr. Satto, if I heard him right, said that the GOP is more open to other points of view than is the Democratic Party. Your thoughts?
Well, Jim, there's plenty of room to the left of center in Louisiana since the center is so far to the right. But, you know, the Louisiana House of Representatives just yesterday voted to legalize a small possession of marijuana. So I think the evidence is there that even in red states, there is more that is possible in terms of what is common sense and what we have in common and what we can agree on and work on together. But I don't know what public opinion polls Mr. Satow is reading that lead him to believe that the nation as a whole is moving anywhere but the left. Things like equal pay for women, you know, the basics, they're becoming more and more popular. $15 minimum wage, every single time they get polled, there's more support for those things, not less.
All right. Dr. Satow, would you respond? Jeff?
Yes.
Would you respond to Mary's, Patricia's take that the country is moving leftward, and she started by noting that the Louisiana House yesterday, a 67-25 vote, by the way, voted for a bill to decriminalize small-time possession of marijuana. Doesn't that indicate that the country and our state even, that they're moving leftward?
Yeah, certainly. Certainly, we've seen this movement across the country on social issues for a number of years now, but a number of other issues that we haven't seen any movement, or say even the reverse. I mean, I would point to as a very recent example, immigration policy. We've seen in the few months that we've had a Biden administration that there's been an increase in support behind measures such as stricter enforcement at the border and other like indicators. So, again, we can look at election results that show that the country in no way is moving towards the left. Success that we've seen the Republican Party have at the state level as well as in congressional elections of last year certainly wouldn't indicate a movement to the left.
Well, the Democrats did regain control of the Senate, lost seats in
tie.
Well, they have control because of Kamala Harris.
Right. Yeah. By 43,000 votes nationwide.
Well, that's true because of the Georgia races. You're correct about that, but they have control, and the Republicans want some close races too. So now on.
My argument being that it'd be hard to say that that's a move to the left when you have such a.
What about gerrymandering? Doesn't that contribute to this?
We look at the academic studies on that, and there is very little evidence one way for one party, major party or the other, that gerrymandering really makes any difference.
Well, when the Republicans had control of the House the last time in that election, which would have been 2016. Democrats actually got more votes nationally in the U.S. House races than did Republicans, but didn't have as many seats. So something's going on to give Republicans an advantage, even when they don't get a majority or a plurality of the vote. So, Mary Patricia Ray, do we have gerrymandering?
I mean, I think every redistricting is going to have special political favors to draw districts for specific people, and it's unavoidable. There is a certain amount of that that tips the scales in favor of the courts intervening. And I think when you are so up against the wall on representation from your party that what you have to resort to in order to maintain close to a majority or to get a majority is gerrymandering, you're fighting a losing battle. You're not appealing to voters, and that's your problem. It has nothing to do with drawing district lines.
Let's go to Brennan in Livingston. Brennan, you're on with Mary Patricia Ray and with Jeff Sado. Hi, Brennan.
Hi, good morning. I would first like to say it feels very disingenuous to hear some of Dr. Sado's statements regarding authoritarianism while we just had a discussion where the Republican Party is moving to remove Liz Cheney because she's giving a dissenting opinion on the former president. But my question is, considering how Dr. Sado stated that he believes that former President Trump is settling into a power-broking position, how can he say that the GOP is moving past the 2020 election when just recently the former president has put out a statement basically reiterating his stance on the big lie or the big hoax and how the election was a stolen election? Thank you.
All right, Dr. Sado, I'd like for you to respond to Brennan and Livingston. Brennan, thank you for your call. Jeff?
The policy preferences that Trump represents are separate from whatever claims he might make about the election. So there are a number of people out there. In fact, I'd say the vast majority of people that would consider themselves supporters of Trump, they're not supporting him because he claims that, you know, that an election was stolen. They're supporting him because he articulates preferences that they also believe in. So, you know, there's little relationship between the two.
Let's go to Doug on Florida. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Doug?
Well, I actually wanted to segue to a different topic, if that's okay.
Go ahead. What's your question?
Well, you said you were going to eventually talk about what's going on at the legislature, so I wanted to thank you for having Stephanie Regal on to talk about the bill that's going to break up the Breck Park system. She did an excellent job.
She did.
Just to raise that here, because one of the things wrong with it is the taxpayers funded these parks as part of one parish system. It belongs to them, and legislators from Shreveport, among other places, have voted to break up the Breck Park system. And I don't think folks in Shreveport would want legislators from Baton Rouge voting to break up their park system. So,
all right. Well, as Doug points out, Will Sintel, recent guest on our show and the Advocate today, front page story, bill to divide Breck passes Senate 28-6. It was not a close vote. The proposal would carve out Central and Zachary from Breck, creating new park systems there and setting up separate commissions to oversee them. Each would have their own superintendent. The measure faces action in the House. Bodie White of Central is the sponsor. And in Will's story, says some legislators are leery of challenging Senator White because of concerns that doing so could doom their own proposals that need state dollars. And by the way, Mayor President Broome is slated to be on with us tomorrow, and we will discuss this with her and with Mark Ballard of The Advocate. But your thoughts, Mary Patricia, about what Doug says, people in parts of the state 300 miles away or close to it from Baton Rouge making decisions that affect the people in the capital region?
Well, you know, I have to disclose that I sit on the Breck Foundation board, not the Breck Commission, and our foundation doesn't take a position on legislation. We don't do any lobbying. So my comments here are my personal ones. But look, you've got the chairman of the Finance Committee carrying this bill in the Senate. So frankly, whatever was on it, it's really not a surprise that it garnered a lot of support. The Louisiana Constitution of 1974 allows for filing local and special bills, but that doesn't mean that the rest of the body doesn't vote on them. So unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your viewpoint, this is in the purview and of the Louisiana legislature, and a lot of your day-to-day life here in Baton Rouge gets voted on by people from Shreveport, from New Orleans, from Lake Charles.
All right. And Jeff Sato, a lot of your everyday life in Shreveport gets voted on by people in Baton Rouge. Is that the right way to do it?
No, but that's the way that, things are arranged in the Constitution. So typically, the way these things work is when you're a legislator from outside a local area that one of these local bills is up, generally you defer to the legislative delegation from there, and in particular to the district or where this is actually happening.
All right, Lance in Branch, Louisiana. We're going to try to get to a few of you before we part company with Mary Patricia and Jeff, but Lance, you're on. Good morning.
Oh, yes, thanks, Jim. I'm a former Republican, independent. I have a question for both your guests, or more of a observation, and you touched on it a few minutes ago, but isn't it obvious that the country's moving to the left, not just with polling data on different issues, but when you actually look at elections, presidential elections, the Democrats win a majority of votes. Since Bill Clinton, I think the Republicans have won a majority of popular vote one time. The Senate is 50-50 as far as seats, but the Republicans only represent like 44%.
All right. Lance making a case numerically, but is it deeper than that, Jeff, or can you look at the raw numbers and say one way or the other that the country is moving leftward, or as you contend, is not?
You know, we can look again at elections. We can look at a variety of polling questions. You know, typically, we can look at, for in terms of a kind of a broad general polling question, ideological identification or partisanship. And you know, those measures have not really changed.
All right, Mary Patricia, your home state of Ohio and Louisiana both were blue states. They're now red states. California was once a red state. It's now a blue state. Are we going to have a continuing evolution when it comes to politics as far as the electoral map?
Well, we're going to have a lot more issue-based voters, and that means sometimes they don't vote with their party. Here in Louisiana and across the country, as messaging, political messaging, and the way that we reach voters becomes more sophisticated, we are influencing the electorate.
We'll be back. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Historian Neil Ferguson, one of the most astute gentlemen about the world at large, is on deck, and we're wrapping it up with Mary Patricia Ray, political strategist on the left side of the spectrum, Jeff Sato on the right, and James in Metairie. James has been waiting quite a while. James, please be brief. You're on.
Well, one comment real quickly. Kudos to Lynn Cheney, who said she will do everything she can to keep Donald Trump away from the White House. Something very disturbing. It's being reported that 120 retired U.S. military admirals and generals are saying that the 2020 election was rigged. We are losing our collective minds.
All right. Thank you, James. Before we leave, I did want to get briefly the take from Professor Sato, who works at Louisiana State University. Your thoughts about Bill Tate IV from South Carolina, the provost, becoming the president and chancellor. There are reports that the Palmetto State's trying to keep Tate, but right now, as we know, or as it appears, Tate is headed this way. Your thoughts, Professor Sato?
He's a radical departure, let's say, from what could have been experienced Jim Henderson, I think many thought was a leading contender. So it's quite a departure from that approach. I think he brings a somewhat different philosophy, a woke philosophy to higher education.
All right. Now, Mary Patricia, a woke philosophy, that's a description that's tainted with all kinds of thoughts, but is it a good move as far as LSU right now being in some dire straits to bring this gentleman to Baton Rouge as the first African-American to lead a university in the Southeastern Conference?
It's definitely an exciting move, and I think one that signals a lack of tone deafness from the university, which is nice for once. I hope that it bears fruit.
Thank you, Mary Patricia, and thank you, Dr. Sato. Let's talk again soon. And we're pleased to be joined by historian Neil Ferguson, Scottish historian, Milbank Family Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford. His latest work is Doom, and it is about catastrophes, and The Guardian puts it this way: the bad news is that plagues are a constant companion to human civilization. The good news is that we're getting better explaining their causes and treating them without recourse to superstition. And it's a big topic, and you have embraced it. And how are we doing, Neil, as far as addressing the catastrophes that right now are in full bloom on the planet?
Well, Jim, I think I'm going to give a mixed report. The idea of doom is to put our current plight into some kind of context, going back and looking at not only plagues in history, but all kinds of disaster. And clearly we're better off than, let's say, medieval European peasants when the Black Death struck in the 1340s. They had no idea what was causing this lethal disease. And of course, it was a lot more lethal than the SARS-CoV-2 virus, because something like 30 or 40% of most European countries' populations were wiped out. So it helps to put this in perspective. It's not actually one of the world's really, really serious disasters, but it's kind of medium-sized. It's a little bit like the 1957-58 Asian flu in terms of its global impact. And the key question that I ask is, why do we seem to be getting less good at handling disasters, even though we understand better what is causing them? We probably never had. No, we certainly never had better scientific understanding of viruses, or for that matter of other forms of disaster, of what causes a hurricane and what it can do to a coastal location like the one where you're based. And yet we do not handle the disasters well when they happen. So a key question in the book is, why has our ability to handle disaster not kept up with our scientific understanding?
The book is Doom, from historian Neil Ferguson. And right now we're in the midst of a pandemic. How are we doing?
Well, not the best in the world, that's for sure, because Taiwan, which is right next to China where all this began, managed to combine rapid testing, contact tracing, and the isolation of the infected so successfully that a grand total of 12 people have died of COVID in Taiwan. And we are now very close to 600,000 deaths. The U.S. isn't the worst country in terms of excess mortality, that is, mortality above what we would normally expect, but it still hasn't been a great performance for the world's number one economy. And the odd thing about it, Jim, is that on paper, we were supposed to be really well prepared for a pandemic. There was a 2019 ranking of countries that put the U.S. right at the top, and yet when a pandemic struck, we did poorly. And I think there's a good reason to ask why that was. This is part of what motivated me to write the book, because the easy answer is just to say, well, the president was an incompetent, and if we'd had a competent president, it would all have been fine. And one can hear similar arguments of that sort in countries like the UK, Brazil, India, where populist leaders look like they are the reason things went wrong. But the trouble with that answer is that there are plenty of countries that did just as badly or even worse without populists in power. And one of the arguments that I offer in the book is that while it's clear that Trump made any number of blunders, there were things that went wrong further down the chain of command that would probably have gone wrong whoever was president. I don't think, for example, that the identity of the president explains why the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, failed to make testing widely available in the first few months of the pandemic. That was a massive mistake, because it meant that we had no idea who was infected and therefore no way really of controlling the spread. And remember, in a pandemic, the great epidemiologist Larry Brilliant says, the keys are early detection and early action. And that's what the Taiwanese got right and the South Koreans, and it's what we got wrong, because we dithered around January, February, into March. We just dithered while this thing spread to every state. And I'm afraid we still, I think, learnt slowly. We never figured out how to do contact tracing in any way, despite the fact that we clearly have the technology to do that. And we had a really major wave around Thanksgiving and Christmas that I think was eminently predictable, and yet we kind of stumbled into it with our eyes wide open. So looking back, I think a lot went wrong. And here's the thing. I don't think this is peculiar to public health. I think we have a pattern of disaster mismanagement that can be traced back 20 years to everything from 9/11 through Katrina, through the financial crisis, through the opioid epidemic. And I ask myself the question, why is it that with all of our scientific knowledge and with the very much larger federal government that we have today, that we can't respond more nimbly and more effectively? And will we do any better with the next disaster? And my suspicion is the answer to that is no.
You say the CDC made a big blunder by not offering rapid testing. The CDC, of course, was criticized by the previous president. Do you think that may have contributed to some of the moves on that front and others regarding how they would have handled the pandemic if there had been another president, be it a Republican or a Democrat?
As I said, there's no question that Trump made a great many blunders, and he and other officials began to interfere in CDC's work. But the failure to get testing right, I don't think can be pinned on Trump. And in fact, I quote some CDC or former CDC officials in the book admitting that the agency was weighed down by, quote, indescribable burdensome hierarchy. There's a former FDA official who says, here's an agency that's been waiting its entire existence for this moment, and then they flub it. So I think people with inside knowledge of how these institutions work know that there was something wrong. One good example of this is the statement by the Deputy Secretary for Preparedness, Robert Kadlec, in 2018. He gave a lecture in Texas in which he said, if we get a pandemic, we'll be SOL. And I have to admit, being a Brit, I didn't actually know what SOL stood for, but it's expletive out of luck.
Uh-huh.
And if the guy whose one job it is pandemic preparedness, is thinking that we'd be SOL if there actually was a pandemic, there's something wrong within the public health system. And I don't think it's enough to say that we had the wrong president. I think Ron Klain, after all, Joe Biden's chief of staff, was very frank when he said in 2019 that if swine flu, which was in 2009, had been as bad as COVID, the outcome would have been pretty disastrous under the Obama administration. So let's admit that Trump made multiple mistakes, and then another president wouldn't have made those mistakes. But let's not pretend that then there would have been no excess mortality, because I think there would still have been a pretty bad performance in the U.S., regardless of who was president. And a lot of your listeners are going to hate me for saying that, but I think we need to be honest with ourselves. It's not just that this went wrong. We've seen a succession of disasters. The listeners will think of Katrina, a succession of disasters where the U.S. has not performed as well as it should have.
All right. A minute to go. The book is Doom, from Neil Ferguson, one of the primary historians in the world. And you say in the book that if there are no patterns discernible with hindsight, the individual living through some traumatic event has practically zero chance of making sense of it in real time.
Especially if the internet's bombarding us with fake news and misinformation about what's going on. This is a problem they didn't have in the Middle Ages, or for that matter, in the 1950s. And I do think, and this is a really striking point, that we had two plagues in 2020. One was an actual virus, and the other was a plague of disinformation and misinformation online. And that.
All right, we are ready to go, but thank you, Neil. And the book is Doom, from Random House. From a historian who certainly is candid about his points of view. And as we know, fake news is often in the eye of the beholder. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.